This is Robert Travis Scott, president of the Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana. I'm sitting in today for Jim Meemster. Movie making and digital media are expanding in Louisiana, which has become one of the leading states for filmmaking. But is the state incentive program for movie makers costing us too much? Can the tax credit program be improved to assist local movie makers? Well, to address those questions, we'll have Chris Stelly, Executive Director of the Louisiana Office of Entertainment Industry Development, and Sherry McConnell, the former head of the office, who is now a film industry consultant, and Steve Spires, a policy analyst with the Louisiana Budget Project, which has recommended changes in the state program. Also, sportsmen in Louisiana are hooked on kayak fishing. To tell us about that new craze, we'll have Chris Holmes, the kayak fishing columnist for Louisiana Sportsman Magazine. Today on The Inkster Show, now the news. Welcome to the Jim Inkster Show. This is Robert Travis Scott, president of the Public Affairs Research Council, and I'm happy to be sitting in today for Jim Inkster. And we've got quite a show for you. J.C. Kane in the booth helping us out. Well, we've seen lots of movie star sightings all around Louisiana. Woody Harrelson at Café du Monde. I've seen Tom Cruise at the ice cream shop in Baton Rouge. And I think it's lent a lot of excitement for the folks here to see all these great movie stars. And one of the things driving this is the movie tax credit program that the state offers, which is very generous. We've spent $1 billion and still gunning so far. And is this too much, or should the program be tailored so it's more focused on local movie making? Here to talk about this are our guest, Chris Stelly, who is the executive director of the Louisiana Office of Entertainment and Industry Development. He's our lead movie recruiter guy. Well, welcome, Chris.
Well, thank you, Robert. It's great to be here. And personally, I can't wait to hear about kayak fishing because
you hang on. It's quite a craze. We'll be talking about that at the end of the show.
Excellent, excellent.
And maybe we can do a movie about it.
Maybe so.
Absolutely. Maybe I can get a tax credit to go kayak fishing.
Well, if you spend $300,000 on an approved motion picture, then certainly we can work that out.
And we've got Sherry McConnell, who's the former head of the Louisiana Film Office. She's now with McConnell and Associates, consulting firm for the film industry, and Steve Spires, a policy analyst with the Louisiana Budget Project, which has written a good bit about this subject. And if you want to join in on the conversation, the number is 225-297-5633. That's 297-5633, or toll-free at 877-217-5757. Chris, let's begin with you. Tell us about how the movie industry is doing in Louisiana and what this tax credit program is all about.
Oh, good. Thanks, Robert. It's great to be here. So far this year, you know, we're seeing more applications than we received at this point last year with the film industry. Right now, we have Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and anyone that's been around downtown New Orleans can see that they have some streets closed and they have some weeds and overgrown. It's a very apocalyptic set that they've got set up.
So if you see a wild ape running around, you don't necessarily have to call the police.
No, you certainly don't. And if you see you might want to, because I think all the apes are actually CG.
Okay.
Computer generated. So if you do see an ape, I would advise you call the police or animal control at some point. You know, we've got Pirates of the Caribbean coming in this fall. We've got another big project called Invertigo. You know, we've here in Baton Rouge, we've had Search Party, which recently wrapped up, and Maze Runner, Hot Tub Time Machine 2, and Top Chef are just some of the shows that are currently in the state of Louisiana. You know, the program has been wildly successful since 2002. We've grown an industry from, you know, literally zero to over $1 billion in economic impact per year with the film industry alone. So we're seeing a lot of success. The program is quite simple to navigate through, which is part of the...
You're talking about the tax incentive
The tax
program.
Incentive program.
Tell us
correct.
About yes. that. How does yes. that work? I mean, it obviously is working at bringing movies in.
Absolutely. And first and foremost, everyone needs to understand that this is not upfront money. These are monies that are tax credits that are issued based upon actual expenditures in the state of Louisiana. So if you have a film that you want to shoot in Louisiana, you spend $1 million, we'll give you $300,000 back in the form of a tax credit. It's a 30% tax credit with an additional bump of 5% for hiring Louisiana residents to work on your film. So if you hire a grip, gaffer, that's a local resident, then certainly you can get an additional 5% on that salary.
So you as a movie maker, you spend money, you make an expense. You're going to get 30% of that back in the form of a movie tax credit, maybe 35%, depending on how you're spending it. But you as the movie maker or investor in the movie, you're not really taking that as a tax credit to offset your actual tax liability. How do they usually use these?
Right. You know, that is one option. You can take it dollar for dollar on your income tax returns if you have any personal or corporate tax liabilities. The second option is you can transfer it on the open market, meaning that if you find a Louisiana taxpayer that has a tax liability, you can transfer or sell that for a negotiated amount. Or you can transfer it back to the state, which is a wildly popular option, and the state will essentially issue a check for 85% of the value of the credit.
So the way most of these are used is the movie investor, movie maker has an expense, and they just get cash back basically for making that expense up to 30-35%. Sherry, you have written a letter to the editor, to the Advocate recently, in which you made some suggestions about how to reform or rethink the movie tax credit program. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, good morning. Thanks for having me. Yeah. I did write that letter. It was less about ideas for how to reform it, but more about needing to look at it to see if we need to reform it. And I think it's time for us to do that. I suggest that the Motion Picture Incentive Act states that it's purpose is to grow a homegrown or indigenous self-sustaining industry. My concern is that with the size of the program that it is, as many tax credits as that we're granting and continuing to grant and at a very accelerated rate, it's time for us to look at it to see if, in fact, we are developing what will be sustainable. That it, to be sustainable and independent would suggest that it should not be dependent on tax credits. And we're not on that path at this moment.
And Steve Spires with the Louisiana Budget Project. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Robert.
Yeah, you have taken a look at this program. How much has this program been costing the state?
The program is very expensive. I think what's most important for people to realize is that this is a spending program. We spent $1 billion, as you mentioned earlier, over the last 10 years on this program, and the cost has been increasing year over year. I think there was this misconception for years that the program somehow paid for itself, that it generated so much economic activity that there was offsetting revenue. But that's not true. The state's own studies have shown that for every dollar we spend on the tax credit, we get about 16 to 18 cents back in revenue, and the rest of that is lost revenue. And you know, our concerns is we've been spending less and less on education and less on health care because in part of the growing cost of tax credit programs, including the film tax credit, and because there are finite resources out there, we think it's time to rein in the growth and the cost of film tax credits so we can free up more revenue for other priorities that we know are also important for economic development and growth.
How much, again, are we talking about in the last fiscal year that we know of, about $230 million?
I think $230 million was what we spent in the last fiscal year. Maybe 10 years ago, we were spending under $40 million. So the growth has been pretty significant over the last 10 years, and we could be on track to spend $250 million or more in the next couple of years, I think.
How much do we have this year, Chris, in certifications? How is that adding up?
This year, the numbers certainly aren't finalized for this year. We're probably laying at or a little bit above where we were last year.
So, and some of that is just cash we're paying to the movie industry, so that 85% return. We just basically they're just taking the cash.
Sure, but with the 85% buyback from the state, you got to understand we're saving 15 pennies on every transaction. Mm-hmm. So there are built-in savings with that 85% buyback.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to a couple of clips from two big movies that were made in Louisiana. One a big Hollywood production, another a more locally homegrown type of movie. JC, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of a treat here.
One day, the storm's gonna blow, the ground's gonna sink, and the water's gonna rise up so high, there ain't gonna be no bathtub, just a whole bunch of water.
Was attacked. We won the war, but they destroyed half the planet. evacuated. Nothing human remains. We're here for drone repair. We're the mop-up crew. This is Jack Harper. I'm good to go.
Well, there you have it. Quvenzhané Wallace in the first one, and Beast of the Southern Wild, and Tom Cruise in the post-apocalyptic Oblivion. Mm-hmm. Very different movies.
Absolutely.
Very different budgets. Beast of the Southern Wild, I don't know, Chris, I think it was probably under $2 million for that movie, and Oblivion was, I don't know, over $100 million.
Well, Beast of the Southern Wild was actually about $1.2 million. And Oblivion, their projected spend in Louisiana was about $75 million. So, yeah, two very different films, two different genres altogether. Beasts of the Southern Wild, of course, garnished a lot of Oscar nominations for a film of its size and you know, first-time director, first-time actress. I mean, just an amazing story in itself. Oblivion, you know, was one of those films that, you know, takes place in a post-apocalyptic world, which actually opened at number one the weekend it opened.
They seem to be very popular in Hollywood. Yes. Hollywood, every single movie I see coming out, they're destroying the world or having it overrun by zombies.
Right.
Sherry, what do you make, I mean, about these two very different movies and how Louisiana ought to be looking at these movies maybe in a different way?
Well, I think it really demonstrates exactly what we should be focusing on. I believe that Beasts of the Southern Wild, being a homegrown product, is exactly where we should focus our efforts. I believe in the entertainment industry, clearly. I've spent many years working on it and working with Chris and helping develop it as a great destination for production. But I also think that we are uniquely positioned because of our local talent to become a hub of content creation as opposed to a hub for just production of somebody else's content. Oblivion represents the Hollywood model, where they're coming in, producing, spending money here, clearly significant economic impact, but then leaving the state. Beasts of the Southern Wild represents homegrown activity, a filmmaker who moved here but fell in love with the state. It has become his muse and now wants to continue to make movies here. And I think our focus should be in nurturing that environment more than the Hollywood.
We're going to go to a caller, but Chris, if you wouldn't mind telling your Hollywood friends to maybe ease off on all the apocalyptic movies. They're kind of overwhelming me and my children. We're getting a little anxious. We have Nathan in downtown Baton Rouge. Nathan, welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Hey, how's it going? Long-time listener.
Great. Well, you have a question for our experienced guests.
Yeah, I guess my question was, you know, there's a little bit of confusion, you know, in the public's eye about how these dollars are being spent and basically what the economic impact is at the end of the day. And there have been basically two different studies published, one that said that we receive an economic impact of around $4 for every dollar spent, and then the other one which says that we're losing money. And I guess...
And what you want to know is what, Nathan? Do you want to know where these are coming from?
Well, no, I guess in terms of your guests, which ones are they citing? You
okay.
know, because I guess it wasn't clear which studies they're citing in terms.
All right, let's take a look at that.
Hey, Nathan, it's Chris. We recently released an economic impact study. Every 2 years, we're required by law to do so. And what that study shows is both the economic impact as well as the fiscal impact. You know, we certainly have seen the program generating an excellent return, 6-1 in terms of growing our economy. However, it's also a very expensive program from a fiscal perspective. Now, that's two different perspectives. When you look at economic impact versus fiscal impact, the fiscal impact is simply the taxes generated, where the economic impact is, it considers a multiplier effect where you have, you know, primary impact, secondary and tertiary impact. So, you know, we've released that report. I'm not sure what other study there is out there, but that's the only one that we've commissioned and put out there.
And I know the Louisiana Budget Project has a study, and we'll take a look at that one. We'll hear a little bit from some movie makers in New Orleans who are into this business. Join us again just in a few minutes with the Jim Inkster Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show, where we're talking about the movie industry in Louisiana and the impact of the tax credits program. And we're here with, I'm Robert Travis Scott, with the Public Affairs Research Council, sitting in for Jim Inkster. If you want to join in on the conversation, it's 297-5633, 297-5633. And we have Darcy McKinnon online from New Orleans, who's going to talk to us. Darcy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Thank you. Darcy, you're with NOVAC, is that correct?
Yeah, NOVAC. It's the New Orleans Video Access Center. We're a 41-year-old nonprofit that's dedicated to cultivating a sustainable film community.
And do you have a sustainable film community in New Orleans?
We do. We're getting there. It's definitely becoming the virtuous cycle of both the jobs in the film industry and support for local filmmakers. It's taken a while, but it's getting there.
How is this tax credit program impacting you and the people you see in the business down there? And do you think there should be some changes made to it?
So one of the things that's been interesting about the tax credit program is that it really has an increasing level of benefit over its consistent application. And one of the concerns we had during this legislative session was that if the program was significantly gutted or altered or changed, the ability for the industry to bounce back later would become more difficult. So as the program has been consistently available, there's been an increase in industry investment in the community, which is to say over the past year and a half, even though the tax incentives have been in place for many more years than that, over the past year and a half, we've really seen brick-and-mortar businesses that support the film industry start to open their doors at a much more regular rate, camera rental houses, equipment houses, local post-production facilities that have been able to confidently make the investment in the community because they know that the industry is going to stick around.
Well, will we be able to reach a point where we won't have to spend over $200 million a year to sustain the industry? What do you think, Darcy?
I think one of the challenges that we try to address at NOVAC is that the ability of a producer who is making plans to do a production in a variety of locations potentially to choose Louisiana as a site is largely dependent not only on the tax incentive program but on their faith in the quality of the workforce. And so what we do at NOVAC is work with the industry, work with the unions, work with the local parishes to develop workforce training programs so that when a producer brings a project to Louisiana, they know not only are they going to get a tax benefit, but they're going to have a highly skilled workforce that can support it.
Right. Now, one of the suggestions that has been made in legislation is that we lower the threshold for how you start to get the credits. Hang on just a second, Darcy, because I want Chris to explain that. What do we have a threshold now to get into the tax credit program?
Right now there is a $300,000 minimum in-state spend for a production to qualify.
How is that working for you, Darcy, and for
the
folks you see down there?
Yeah, I was actually involved in the push to lower that threshold, and not for everybody, but for long-term Louisiana residents. So the amendment that that I'm really in support of, that we actually put on the bills that were on the floor, but they, since those bills didn't make it through, have not yet been incorporated into it, is that...
Yeah, the session is over, and so that's dead for the time being. But we're going to be revisiting that, and that's why we're having this conversation.
Yeah, what I'd like to see is under the exact same conditions that existed for the Louisiana Filmmakers Grant Program, so someone who's been living in Louisiana for 3 years or more and is doing a professional film production, even though that film production may be far below the threshold of the $300,000, that they can qualify. So I'd like to bring for Louisiana residents of 3 years or more the threshold down to $50,000. What that would do is create a circle for independent filmmakers to be able to participate in the tax incentive program.
Very good, Darcy. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in and joining into the conversation. We're going to pick up on your points here and have a little further discussion with them. And good luck down there with your program.
Thanks so much. Y'all have a great day.
Steve?
Yeah, I wanted to clear up really quick this discrepancy between the economic impact and the revenue impact. You know, there's no doubt that the film tax credit generates economic impact. When you subsidize anything, you get more of it. When you spend money on anything, it generates some economic impact. But that doesn't negate the fact that the revenue impact is still negative for the state, and that diverts dollars that could be spent on on other things. And, you know, with all the budget cuts in recent years, especially to higher education, that's why we think it's important at the budget project to make some changes to the film tax credit to control the cost and kind of rein it in. Because right now it's essentially uncapped in terms of the number of productions, in terms of what they can claim. So we'd like to see some reforms to kind of put that on a more sustainable path and reduce the cost over time, not in a way that yanks the rug out from under the industry. We don't just want to turn the lights off, but, you know, reduce the generosity of the credit over time, change what things maybe are eligible for reimbursement, some of the things that the General Administration actually proposed in the last legislative session in terms of, you know, changing the salary cap.
The governor's administration said, let's have a salary cap on these big, fat salaries for, you know, the Tom Cruises of the world, so that we're not covering all of their salary, at least all their Louisiana-made salary. I'll try to put a cap on that and a few other suggestions. You're listening to the Jim Inkster Show. I'm Robert Travis Scott, sitting in for Jim Inkster. If you want to join the conversation, it's 297-5633. We're sitting here with Chris Stelly with the Louisiana Film Office, Sherry McConnell, a film industry analyst, and Steve Spires with the Louisiana Budget Project. We're going to go to line two. Mike, welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Hello.
Hi, Mike. You have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I've been working in the film business for probably about 23, 25 years now. And, when you listen to how large the business has grown, I've heard numbers estimating about 14,000 people that make their living, you know, in the film business or entertainment business here in Louisiana, and it's grown to equal about the size of the seafood business. But what I don't understand about the the state says it's costing us is, you know, these jobs pay, I mean, anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 a year. I mean, these are really good-paying jobs. If you work 8 months out of the year, you can make $80,000, you know. I mean, but are they taking into account in these studies what the people, you know, what these salaries are generating on their own? I mean, like, I bought a house, I bought rental property, you know, the taxes I pay on the vehicles I buy. I mean, how do you track that? And you know, if it's just a straight 30%.
Yeah, and Mike, how steady are these jobs, though? These productions come in and you get an $80,000 compensation 1 year, but then the next year, are you as fortunate?
Well, I mean, it is a freelance kind of business, but since the incentives kicked in 2002, whatever, I do two or three movies a year that go for 2 or 3 months, 4 months, 6 months at a time.
What's your sense of when people are working on a movie that are there? How many of those people actually live in Louisiana, and how many just pick up and go to the next movie in another state?
I mean, obviously there are going to be people at work all the time because of their reputation and what they do, depending on how their job is, but less and less people are coming in from out of town. Like it used to be, you know, a good 2/3 of the crew would come in from out of town before the incentives. And now I would say like 90% of the people on a crew are local people. I mean, they've either moved here.
That would be good news. It would seem like we're starting to get there, starting to be sustainable. Chris?
Yeah, it absolutely is. Part of our philosophy in our office is we want to move people out of hotel rooms and into homes here in Louisiana. You know, we've seen the union numbers grow from, you know, 100 active members before 2002 to well over 1,500 active members. So more and more people are moving here. More and more of our young people are coming up through the ranks to whether they graduate high school or college and working in the film industry. So we are continuing to build up that crew base. You know, just as far as the jobs go, we have approximately 6,000 direct jobs associated with the film industry. And when you include indirect jobs, like Mike had said earlier, that's over 14,000. And these jobs are good paying. They're about $51,000 on average a year. And, you know, Mike, just to clarify the economic impact versus the fiscal impact, there are formulas that economists use out there to measure everything that we take into account, everything that you're talking about, the taxes you pay on your property, the taxes you pay as far as income taxes. They're two different measurements. Fiscal impact, where the taxes that are collected by the state is much less than what we give out in tax credits. The report says that. But all of that is accounted for in these studies and part of that formulaic equation that economists use.
Great. Thanks, Mike, for calling in with that question. That was great. Steve, do you have the same perspective as Chris on all of this?
Yeah, I do agree with Chris on this, that the economic models we're talking about take into effect all these indirect effects, take into effect the indirect jobs, take into effect, you know, people buying cars and houses. But even under the most generous assumptions in terms of multiplier effects, the film tax credit program still comes nowhere close to paying for itself.
And I was hoping you'd have some disagreements.
You know, whether people are huge supporters or huge detractors of the program, I just think it's important that people realize it is a spending program. It does not pay for itself, and it's very expensive. And you know, the question we have to ask is, you know, can we afford this? And what are our spending priorities at a time when state government is not flush with cash?
Sherry, Darcy made such an interesting suggestion. We're talking about lowering that threshold and trying to nurture the local movie making. And you and I have talked about this too. It's not just movie making. It's also just digital media, software development. There's a lot of overlap in all of that. So when we're talking about filmmaking, we really need to be talking about a broader range of issues here, a broader range of types of productions.
Indeed. I mean, I often question what digital media means. I think, you know, filmmaking, sound recording, music making, interactive, it's all part of digital media. And I think actually the state's approach is more holistic because of their suite of incentives. They do incentivize sound recording as well as filmmaking and all of those things kind of being digital media. I will suggest that what I would like to see is us leverage this activity. So Chris and Steve had talked about the fact that there's this great economic impact, which is clear, although I will suggest, too, that that economic impact is diminishing. Over the last 6 years, the LED reports show that that multiplier is actually going down while the cost of the program is going up. Having said that, it seems to me that we're actually creating – we're not on a path of sustainability. So while we're creating great jobs, it is all dependent on product that's coming from out of state. And so what we should be doing, or what I suggest we should be looking at doing, is developing opportunities where we're leveraging that activity, those tax credits. Let Hollywood start paying in to the development of local film industry and filmmakers. And the NOVAC amendment that Darcy spoke to is a great example of that. How do we actually focus on developing our own filmmakers? So they're home. They're not going to go back to Hollywood.
Yeah, and I guess when there was some concern that we had lost Jurassic Park 4 and had gone to another state, that there was some gnashing of teeth about that. And I'm not certain quite how much anxiety I should have over that, because that would have been very expensive for the state if it had stayed, and they might have just come in and gone.
Let me clarify that.
Okay.
Jurassic Park had – I spoke to the film company. They haven't left the state. I mean, they kind of put a pause button. They have not gone, to my knowledge, to another state just yet. I think that project is on hold for the present time until they get some script issues and some casting issues worked out.
My point here is – and what I'm trying to understand better is when these big Disney and mm-hmm. big Hollywood productions come in and spend tens and tens of millions of dollars, mm-hmm. do they tend to be more of those productions that come in and camp and then leave, and you don't have as much long-term impact, you're not building as much infrastructure as you are with this sort of the Moonbot productions and these other types of developments that we see here in the state.
No doubt that's the nature. That's just the nature of production. But you have to understand, too, that the studios, we've seen significant repeat business. So when you see a company coming in, that indicates a lot of confidence in our program, a lot of confidence in our crew base, and you do see a lot of repeat business. It's the nature of production that it is. You know, not to lessen the importance of local filmmakers. That's something we absolutely support and want to grow and thrive to continue. But let's not discount the benefits of the pictures.
Ultimately, you want the movie makers to come here primarily because we have the talent here.
Exactly.
We have the production people here who can do it.
You
can get the talented labor and the infrastructure.
Yes.
Not just because we're going to give them cash.
Absolutely.
To come in and make a movie. HB in Denham Springs. Welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Thank you. Many of Mr. Jim's guests in the past, such as Mr. C.B. Forgotston, and also it was published in The Advocate, I think, by the legislative auditor, who checked on the expenses plus the liabilities of all of these tax credits, not just with the film industry, but overall, all of them. And we are losing billions of dollars across the board that could have been going to health, education, and in our colleges that we're basically losing because they do not generate the revenue, as your other people have said on the show this morning. We're going in the minus column. That's it. And your opinion on that, please.
Well, I guess that's this is part of the issue, isn't it? Is that the movie tax credit is also in league with a lot of other different kinds of tax credits?
Well, yeah, I don't disagree with that, and thank you, HB, for those comments. I would suggest to you that this is an investment. We decided to invest in this industry. I think that it is a perfect industry, a perfect fit for us. The question is whether or not we're leveraging that investment and whether or not it's a good one. And I would suggest to you that there's a way to make this activity work better for the state. I mean, let's make these large studios contribute to local development of local filmmakers. Let's make them create a pool for funding local filmmaking. Let's make them have interns that come from some of our local schools. Let's force them to give something back as opposed to just coming here, using our venues, creating a great deal of economic impact, but that is not a sustainable model, and it's time for us to look at as a sustainable model.
Sherry, that's an excellent point. Let's all make note of that and not lose sight of those kinds of suggestions. We have Miriam in Inniswold. Miriam, welcome to the Jim Inkster Show. Nope, we lost Miriam. I'm sorry. She's emailing in. Here we go. She says all the films, her son is returned to Louisiana because of the film industry. He's 30 years old. She says all the films her son has worked on have been short subjects, under $50,000. Extending the credits would be a boon to her. So there's at least one example of someone...
If I can chime in, I think Miriam highlights another good point about what we're doing. In all of our incentive programs, we're giving our young people that have moved away, we're essentially reversing the brain drain in a lot of these industries where, you know, 10 short years ago, there was no possibility for anyone to do what Miriam's son is able to do nowadays and actually work in the film industry. And I think that's an absolute positive impact. Something that you can't really measure in numbers, the fact that we're turning people around and bringing them back home.
Steve?
I don't disagree with Chris that it's great that people are coming back to work in the industry. And, you know, I certainly want to see movies made here. But at some point, the industry will have to, you know, continue to subsist with less state subsidies. We talk about this as an investment. You know, an investment pays a return. You make an upfront investment and you try to grow an industry that can then be self-sustaining. But we've been subsidizing 30% of it in perpetuity. And, you know, even modest changes to the credit this year were heavily opposed by the industry because they're so dependent on the subsidies. We need to wean this industry and other industries. It's not just films, though films is certainly one of the fastest growing.
Well, there's a local boy. Sonny Landreth is going to take us out on this segment. Thank you very much to Sherry McConnell, Chris Stelly, and Steve Spires for joining us this morning. What a great conversation about the movie tax credits program, and thanks for y'all's contribution to that discussion. We'll have Chris Holmes with Kayak Fishing on in the next segment. Stay with us with the Jim Inkster Show. Welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show. This is Robert Travis Scott with the Public Affairs Research Council sitting in for Jim Inkster. And we have a very special guest calling in from the New Orleans area, Chris Holmes, because he is the kayak fishing columnist for Louisiana Sportsman Magazine. Chris, welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Hello.
Hey, Chris, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great. Well, welcome to the Jim Inkster Show, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Certainly glad to be here.
Well, Chris, you probably have one of the best gigs in the world. You're the kayak fishing expert. You write a column for Louisiana Sportsman Magazine, and this trend has really picked up and caught on across Louisiana. Tell us about what's going on.
Well, it's not only Louisiana. I mean, it's actually worldwide, but, you know, kayak fishing has exploded. It's here to stay. It is the fastest growing segment of the sport fishing industry, and it's just an excellent way economically to get out, get on the water, have some excitement, get some exercise, and most importantly, catch some fish.
most importantly, catch some fish. And you can catch them better in Louisiana than any other place that I know of. Is that not right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, tell us about why kayak fishing is catching on so much. I mean, I have to say, I mean, it's some people might say, well, it's a little cramped in there, and if you caught a fish, it might just drag you all over the place. How do you reel it in when you're in a kayak?
Oh, that's all part of the fun, actually. You know, it does take a little getting used to and some proper planning and, you know, equipment, but that's one of the exciting parts of it. You're right there, you're close to the water, you're close to the fish, you know, you're not fighting it in a big old fish. They are going to pull you around. That's what we look for. You know, Cajun sleigh rod is a pretty common term used around here.
The Cajun sleigh rod. Yeah, and listeners out there who have had a good Cajun sleigh rod, call in and tell us about it at 297-5633. It's the Jim Inkster Show. We have Chris Holmes on, a kayak fishing enthusiast and columnist. And you can join the conversation at 297-5633 or toll-free at 877-217-5757. I've heard about the bull rodeo, the redfish bull.
Yeah, right.
What is that?
Ride the bull.
It's
a rodeo in Grand Isle put on by Captains Danny and Kristen Ray. This will be the fourth year. It's August 17th this year, and it all takes place right in Caminata Pass. You got about a 5-minute paddle out of Bridgeside Marina. Last year we had nearly 300 kayakers participate, expecting hopefully 400 this year, and it's a lot of fun.
What do you do? How do you ride a bull?
Pretty much, you're going to get out there, anchor up in the pass. You're going to be soaking, you know, some type of bait on the bottom, the crab, live bait, whatever. And once you hook up to one of these 20, 30, 40-pound bull redfish, you're going to go for a ride till you get him in. And
I guess it's not a high-speed experience.
It's not high speed, but why you got him hooked to the end of your line? It's a lot of fun.
About that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how this is affecting fishing and the fishing clubs and the level of enthusiasm about fishing in Louisiana.
Yeah, there's lots of factors driving the explosion in the kayak fishing market. Gas prices, you know, is one. The green movement, you know, it's certainly out there without a motor. You're not using any carbon fuels. You do have a plastic boat, but you got that. And then just an exercise, you know, you're out there, you're either paddling, pedaling, or whatever, so you're combining your fishing with a little exercise instead of just riding in a boat. And, you know, here in Louisiana, we've got several kayak clubs that have, you know, been spawned in the last several years. We've got Southeast Louisiana's Bayou Coast Kayak Fishing Club. Central, you're looking at the Lafayette Kayak Fishing Club, and also in the New Orleans area itself, a new one on the scene is the Lake Pontchartrain Basin Kayak Fishing Club. And they're all great avenues for resources, information, meeting up with people, learning about kayak fishing, and meeting some really good people.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Now, if I wanted to get a motorboat and go out and do the usual motorboat fishing, I guess I would have to convince my wife to not only let me buy a motorboat, but I'd also have to get a trailer. And then, of course, I'd have to get a really nice truck to pull all of that.
Right.
That's a little different in the kayak world, I guess.
Yeah, and like I said, you can start off. I mean, we've got guys in compact cars that are carrying kayaks on the roof, so they don't need anything with that. You know, we've got all your normal launch places that you can launch a boat certainly are accessible by kayak. But, you know, a kayak you can throw off the side of the roof. We generally call it combat launching, and they're just unlimited places in Louisiana, you know, to get out and get on the water in a kayak.
You know, I've done a lot of shore fishing, as I'm sure you have too, and don't you always look on just that opposite shore or that marsh section over a little further away from you, just out of reach? And think, boy, if I just had a raft or a kayak or something to cruise over there, then I'd catch some fish, huh?
Absolutely. It's the way to get there. And I'm not a shore fisherman. It actually drives me nuts. And it's kind of funny because you can put me in a kayak and I'll sit there and cast at that rock jetty all day long. If you put me on that rock jetty to cast the other way, I'm going to last 10 minutes before I get bored.
Well, is it tough to get out into the surf with one of these, or are you mostly a marsh fisherman?
No, I do it all. Surf fishing, you know, like Grand Isle and stuff, you got to pick your days, you got to pick your surf. You know, obviously I recommend it for the more experienced guys, and that'll come, you know, with time. First and foremost on anything, safety, you know, wherever you are, marsh or whatever, get a good PFD and wear it. You know, we've had a couple instances across the Gulf Coast, including Louisiana, in the last couple of years, where we've had some guys. We don't know the whole story of what happened, but, you know, certainly safety is your first thing, and you want to wear that life, you know, best.
297-5633 to join the conversation with Chris Holmes, the kayak fishing columnist for Louisiana Sportsman magazine. I guess in a kayak you can carry, you can cover a lot more territory. You can put your hook down in a lot more places.
You can, and what, you know, one thing you're also going to realize, it's one thing I like to point out, is, you know, guys in a boat are going to launch at a boat launch, and then they're going to take off. They got a big motor, they got to run, they got to justify it, whatever. The fish don't know that the boat launch is there. And you'd be surprised, you know, by us, we are limited. If you do put in, you know, we travel sometimes 10, 15 miles in a day round trip. But you're going to catch fish right there. How many fish are you going to run over, you know, on that 20-mile journey on a boat, 30-mile journey on a boat? You're just passing them by.
So. Well, tell us about some of your better experiences and your better hauls out there.
I've fished all. I've been in a couple oceans and Costa Rica and Mexico and everywhere else. So I've caught some big rooster fish, big barracuda, big sharks, mahi-mahi.
Now, come on. Now, the idea of catching a big shark in a kayak is a little bit unnerving.
Same thing. Just comes, you know, with experience, with proper precautions, you know, anything can happen. But we do the right handle, and usually, you know, the sharks are cut off. We'll get them boat side, hopefully get a nice photo, and then, you know, get them cut off to swim again. But it all can be done. But, you know, certainly in Louisiana, inshore, you know, our saltwater bass, red bass, trout, you know, all that, the bass in North Louisiana, we've just got unlimited opportunities to kayak fish in Louisiana.
Unlimited opportunities. You can't ask for better than that. Now, there's been, I think, some manufacturers of kayaks that have done some good business here in Louisiana. Is that right?
Yes, actually. I mean, we've got a company out of Baton Rouge. A couple of young guys that went to LSU started a company with a boat, you know, that they designed specifically for the marsh. It's one of the key advantages of it. It's a really stable boat that you can stand up in. So people that like to sight fish will do it. It's KC Kayaks out of Baton Rouge. You know, I own 5 kayaks now. If I could have 15, I would. You know, every model brand is not great for every opportunity, so you really got to pick, you know, which one would suit what you think your majority of your fishing is going to be.
Are you married, Chris?
I am.
Okay. So what, does your wife go kayak fishing with
she
you?
She does. She likes it. She's not a fan of getting up early in the morning, but, you know, that's the kayaks are stable, they're safe, easy. You know, anybody can maneuver one, even children. You know, we're getting seeing a lot more people with kids now, and it doesn't take long before the kids, you know, want to be in their own kayak, and they're right next to
Bass fishing. Here's a lady with an interest in kayaking, Bridget from Mid-City. Good morning. Welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Good morning. I've been in the market for buying a kayak for a couple years. I've been researching. I think I'm maybe going to go with a Hobie and one of the paddling ones. Can you speak to some issues for safety for single people who might be going out fishing? And I'll take the answer off air. Thank you.
You know, my biggest recommendation always is generally to go with a friend, at least one other person. You know, safety in numbers is, it's true. You know, with that said, I do fish regularly by myself if I have to. What you want to do in that situation, again, make sure you got a PFD and you're wearing it. Make sure somebody knows where you're going, when you're expected to come back. Generally, we call that, you know, filing a float plan, whatever, some relative, friend. If you got a last-minute trip you're going to make and you're going somewhere, write it down. Put a paper on your dashboard, you know, in the window of your car. If your car is parked somewhere, that's usually going to be the first thing somebody finds to come looking for you. So you just want somebody to know where you're at, where to look for you and stuff. But other than that, you know, your general safety precautions, with the PFD being the number one. I mean, when accidents happen, drowning is usually the cause, and it's very difficult to drown when you have a PFD on.
About that. Now, she referred to a paddling kayak. And
I'm sorry.
Well, I guess we all thought we paddled kayaks, but there's
traditionally, you know, a canoe paddle, you know, you're going to use a paddle and do it. And there are many kayaks designed for that, many fishing kayaks designed for that. One of the, you know, newer models has been out for a while, but Hobie, which you mentioned, is actually a pedal drive. They have.
Oops.
And it's a pedal kayak. It has a handle for a rudder, so you actually pedal. great fishing platform. Your hands are free for fishing. That's primarily what I fish out of. And I said I own four of those. And, offshore trolling, inshore paddling, beating the banks for redfish, whatever. Very easy. You're using your larger leg muscles, so you're not tired, you know, using those upper body muscles. And you can paddle if you want. They do come with a paddle, and you can do that if you want that exercise. But I'm very partial to pedaling.
Well, 297-5633. That's 297-5633 to join the conversation. If you like to go fishing and want to talk to Chris Holmes, the kayak fishing columnist for Louisiana Sportsman Magazine, call on in. This is Robert Travis Scott with the Jim Inkster Show, sitting in for Jim today. And Chris is telling us about the kayak fishing craze that's seized all across the Louisiana. I go down to Grand Isle as often as I can, which is never often enough, and I have seen more and more kayaks loaded up into the backs of pickup trucks and on top of station wagons, and every way you can fasten them onto a vehicle to get them down there.
Absolutely. And what you're going to see, and you're also going to notice, Grand Isle, the people that do have the camps on the water and stuff, almost every camp now you're going to start seeing kayaks at. And what they're realizing, we got these boats, again, you invest in it there, but it's always ready to go. You know, charging a motor, no needing gas, no worrying about whether it starts or not. So you're finding more and more of them for these little quick trips, and they want to go. They got their kayak sitting on their dock, and they just launch it and go with, you know, very little expense and effort. And one thing I just wanted to mention, too, we're talking about kayaks. You know, certainly, again, not every model type fits everybody or their method of fishing. And one of the things I always recommend is to try many different models and brands before you make your choice. And one thing that just popped up, I just got noticed that there is what's called a kayak demo day, and there will be one in the Baton Rouge area this Saturday. Massey's Outfitters, which is a kayak dealer, is holding a demo day, and they'll probably have 10, 15 different brands, 20, 30 kayaks out there. It's all free. You can go there, jump in each one, and try it and see what it's like.
How about that? Massey's. Well, they'll have them in the water for you?
They're going to have them in the water. They're actually going to be at the Breck Milford Wampole Memorial Park on LSU Lakes this Saturday from 10:30 to 1:30.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. We'll check that out. I might be down there myself checking that out. So how much is it going to cost me to get outfitted with a kayak now that you've convinced me to do this?
You know, new for, you know, a decent fishing kayak, and again, it runs the range from, you know, basic models up to the, you know, the fully stepped up ones, and you're going to look anywhere from 500 as high as 3,000. You know, what we do see is most people start, you know, with the lower end kayaks. Like I said, you can get a decent kayak for $500. There's also a very robust used market on kayaks, and it's really from not so much people getting in and getting out of it, it's people getting in and then stepping up, you know, to different models or additional models. And they do go fast. You have to watch, you know, Craigslist, Louisiana Sportsman, all those places, and even the kayak clubs are good sources for that. But, you know, if you've got basic fishing gear, you don't need a whole lot of specialty stuff, you know, for the kayak.
What do you look for in a kayak, just the basic stuff that you need? I know most of them are outfitted specially for fishing. You don't just go out and buy a kayak, you buy a fishing kayak, right?
Yeah, if you're planning on fishing, you want to look at one that's, you know, designed for fishing, which most all of the major manufacturers, you know, are now doing. What that's going to mean is they're tailored to spots to put tackle bags, you know, tackle boxes. You know, a lot of guys use soft ice chests to keep their catch, but they're going to have built-in rod holders, a place to mount a GPS depth finder. You know, that's the other thing. It's kayaking is termed a minimalist sport, and if you look at mine,
in America, we don't do things in a minimal way. Once we get the idea of having a kayak, which you just have the little boat and your fishing pole, then we add on, like you said, the cooler. You got to have a place to put your fish, and then you've got to have GPS, and then maybe a radio, maybe a sound system. Yeah. Do they have a sound system?
Some of them have that. And again, that's all. It's nice. It's not necessary, you know, so you can get, you know, basic, stay basic. A lot of guys do that. It's just going to be personal preference, you know, as you go.
Do you like to go out just alone for the solitude, or do you like to go out with groups and have that camaraderie out on
the
water?
Well, that's the one unique thing about kayak fishing is you can have both all in the same day, you know, because you go out with a group, you launch, everybody kind of spreads out. So, again, when you're catching your fish, generally, it's you. It's you and the fish. You know, you're fighting it. You're landing it. You've got to handle all that stuff because you're one person in that boat. But, you know, we just did a trip last weekend, went out, and the thing about it is you got five guys, and then they spread out. But, you know, you stay in contact now with phones or radios, and one guy gets on the fish, you can work your way that way. Whereas if all five guys are in the same boat, they're either on fish or not, you know. But so you do get both. You get the group part, you know, you meet back up for lunch, you're sitting there, but you can also explore these little ponds and pockets by yourself. And again, it's you and the fish and you and the environment while you're out there.
How about it? Well, it sounds like you have nothing but fun going out doing this. I thank you very much for being on the show, Chris. You have an enviable job and an enviable hobby, and we appreciate you sharing your experiences about kayak fishing. Well, thanks for joining the Jim Inkster Show. This is Robert Travis Scott signing off this week, guest hosting for Jim. I've enjoyed being with you. I hope to come back again someday, and Jim will be back in the chair tomorrow. Good morning. Have a great day. Thanks for joining us.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.